Hello, friends, and welcome to the Virtual Ingenuity Business Podcast. I'd like to introduce you to our guest. Today, we're going to talk about accounting and tax preparation for your business. Since 1982, Moshe Klein and Associates has been providing affordable bookkeeping and tax services to small business owners and individuals in all 50 states. Moshe takes pride in knowing his clients by name. He enjoys being available to his clients to answer routine questions and to provide guidance in just about any matter concerning small businesses. And Moshe has served on the board of many nonprofit and business organizations over the years. Moshe is also the founder and event host of Power Networking Team. And he's also the host of the weekly feature program, Spotlight on Small Business. Moshe and I have been friends for over 4 years now, and he is just a wonderful person to talk with and to gain tax and accounting information. Moshe, welcome to the Virtual Ingenuity Business Podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Claudine, and thanks for that kind introduction. You are a pleasure to talk to. That's what makes our conversation so enjoyable, easy to talk to, and you're just an excellent networking partner. Thanks for having me today.
You're welcome, Moshe. I couldn't imagine having any other guests to talk about accounting and tax preparation. So let's dive in, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. So, it's important, Moshe. You and I both know we both have our businesses. We both have clients that have their own businesses. And it's really important to get a business set up correctly and file taxes accordingly. So let's talk about what businesses can claim on their tax returns. Their tax and how do tax deductions work as well? And what's a 1099?
Well, that's a great question. You actually asked several questions within one, but
Within one.
I'm glad you started off with that because there's such a tremendous misunderstanding, Claudine, in the small business community. First of all, what is a business and what qualifies as a business expense or a deduction? So let's start from the beginning. I might have a full-time job where I'm a W-2 employee for a company, but have a side business. And let's say I do painting and drywall on the weekends. And, I just come to your house, we agree on a price, and you hire me, and I paint and I do the work, and you're satisfied, and you pay me. So, did I set up a business? Did I notify the state or the IRS? No, I'm just doing some side work to make some extra money to support my family. But believe it or not, that is a business activity. It's a sole proprietor a business, and that means that there are some rules and regulations that I have to be aware of, and some benefits as well. So, what somebody needs to do first of all is decide what is the best business setup or format for them. There's tax questions that should be asked, and there's legal questions that should be asked. But regardless whether you set up a sole proprietorship, a very informal way of doing business, or an LLC, or an S corp, or a C corp, and there's so many others, it is a business, and you need to be aware of how to manage it. So your question was, what can you claim as a business expense? And the answer is simply any legitimate expense that is for the benefit of the business. So let's stay with that example. I come to your house to do painting and drywall. So I've got to, have a paintbrush and a can of paint and some other tools. All of those things are legitimate business expenses, and I should keep good records. The best thing to do is to have a credit card that I would use specifically for business. And that way I know that everything on that card was connected to my business in some way. There's also mileage expenses if I'm driving to, you know, the job or the client or the customer. There are errands I have to run. There are many expenses relating to insurance and legal expenses and accounting expenses. So regardless of how you set up your business, any legitimate business expense that can be directly tied to the operation of the business would be something that the business owner can claim.
Thank you, Moshe. So what are the filing dates and deadlines for taxes?
Sure. Well, they used to be fairly consistent until COVID hit, but we're expecting things to stay pretty stable this coming year. So there are two primary and important filing dates. For some business returns, like a partnership return, which would be Form 1065, which could also be a multi-member LLC, and also an S corporation, Form 1120S, those would be two very good examples of returns that are due by March 15th, unless, of course, the IRS extends that for whatever reason. Another important deadline, we always say April 15th. This year, it'll be April 18th because of a federal holiday and the 15th falls on the weekend. But that's when our personal tax returns are due, Form 1040, and also C corporations are due, Form 1120. Those are the two main dates. And of course, there are many dates throughout the year, Claudine, for estimated tax payments and other types of you know, tax filing obligations.
Moshe, so what happens then if a business owner misses that initial deadline? How far in advance then does that business owner need to file an extension?
So you have, that's a great question. There are, first of all, two types of main penalties that you have to be aware of. One is failure to file your tax return. And the second one is failure to pay any taxes that are owed. So the easiest one to avoid is the failure to file. The IRS allows all of us up to 6 months of an extension past the required due date to pull your paperwork and returns together. So you can file for that extension anytime up until the actual due date. So assuming it was a March 15th due date, you have until March 15th to file that simple form with the IRS, and you would have until September 15th to file that return. Now, the second thing I mentioned is completely unrelated. Even if I put my returns on extension, Claudine, that does not give me an extension of time to pay my taxes that are owed. So if I don't know exactly how much I owe because I haven't put the return together, I have to make a good faith estimate. And there are several ways to figure that out. And I have to pay, hopefully, as close to 90% of what the real tax would be in order to avoid penalties and interest. So you do have a lot of opportunity to put that return on extension, take the time you need to either prepare it yourself or seek out a qualified tax professional. No reason that anybody should be penalized for that.
That's right. And so making estimated tax payments, Moshe, how does one do that? I know that there are vouchers out there and one can pay quarterly, but explain that process of making estimated tax payments.
No, you're asking wonderful questions. All the questions you are asking so far are things that come up on a daily basis at our firm and firms like ours around the country. And that tells me it's misunderstood. So having the opportunity to answer your question and to share this information with other small business owners is so, so vitally important. So the answer to your question is this. When you earn untaxed income as a contractor. Let's continue with that example. I came to your house and I did the work and you paid me more than $600. I am required to report that income, and you are required to give me a 1099 so that I can include that on my tax return. And a copy of that needs to be provided to the IRS. And I have to figure out, and there are formulas, what my estimated tax might be. In some cases, it's not required to make a quarterly payment, but most small business owners generating any regular revenue that's untaxed should probably check to see if they're required and should make those quarterly payments. And I'll explain how that's done because there are penalties and there are interests that the IRS will slap on over and above the taxes owed. They take that very seriously. Our tax system is called pay as you go. So if I'm a W-2 employee working at Walmart and I get paid every 2 weeks, Walmart takes out a certain amount, matches it, and sends it in. My only concern is filing my return by April. But if I'm a small business owner earning untaxed income, I have an obligation to pay as I earn that money. That's the way the system is designed. The two primary ways, the easiest way, if a small business owner is comfortable, is to go right online to the IRS and make the payment. It really is quite user-friendly, but not everybody's comfortable with that. And the other way, like you said, is to get a voucher. It's a simple voucher. You can get it online, or your tax professional can provide it to you, and you just write a check, make sure you label the check correctly, what it's for, and mail it in, and they will apply it.
Perfect. Wonderful advice and wonderful answers, Moshe. Thank you so much for that. So let's talk now about state income taxes. You know, you are in Arizona. I'm in Alabama. So are there differences with state income taxes? You and I both know that. Many business owners know that. But let's go into the particulars about state income tax and what we should know about that based on the state that you're in.
Absolutely. So we would have to have 8 hours of program time today to talk about all the different state rules and regulations regarding income tax. But at a very high level, every state has their own Department of Revenue and their own taxing rules, regulations, and laws. So there's a difference in every state between income tax, sales tax, property taxes. Two easy examples, everybody knows Florida doesn't have an income tax, but certainly they have sales tax. So it's the small business owners, it's everyone's responsibility to understand what the requirements are for income tax in the state you live in. I'll even go further, especially since our audience today is a small business crowd. You know, there is something called nexus, Claudine, where I might be in one state, but if I'm conducting business in other states, some states may determine that I've established a presence or a nexus in their state. And even though I never step foot there, they might claim that I might owe some sales tax or some kind of a tax obligation for doing business in their state. So just like if you and I were to drive our car and go into different states, we need to be aware of what the speed limit is, what the rules of the road are in those states. Ignorance is not an excuse. And I do see that every day, Claudine, that people don't understand. They may have to register their business within their state or city or county and pay taxes on the money they're earning. And later they find out the hard way, Claudine, they get slapped with large penalties, fines, interest going back several years. States, in many cases, can be even tougher than the IRS.
That's right. That is so true. So let's talk payroll, Moshe. If you're a business owner and you have employees, how should one file if a business owner has employees?
Oh, Claudine, this is one of the most important subjects that all small business owners really need to take the time to understand. It is one of the most common reasons for IRS audits. Let's take a moment and really just, deep dive into this. There is a common misunderstanding that, if your company is not as large as IBM or Walmart or, Tesla, that you can hire people to work for you on a 1099, a contractor basis, and not have to withhold certain taxes from the worker's paycheck and not match and remit. So they say, I'll just hire you as a contractor. I'll pay you what we agree, and you'll be responsible for the taxes. And in many cases, it's a wrong decision. It's actually, it can be considered a criminal matter, tax evasion when an employer, a company, hires people that should be a W-2 employee, but they incorrectly code them as a 1099 contractor. Now, what's the difference? So, in the situation where I came to your house or to your office and I did this work truly as a contractor, where we agreed on the work to be done and the price point, but I don't have to use your equipment, come on your schedule, you don't control my activity, just the end result. That would be a classic example of somebody that is truly a 1099 contractor. I'm responsible for my own insurance. I'm responsible for bringing my tools. I'm responsible for managing my time and my business. A W-2 employee is someone that truly works for the employer. The employer controls the schedule, the location. He generally provides the tools, the equipment, covers that employee with some kind of workman's compensation and similar types of protections. It's expensive to have employees, and that's why so many small business owners incorrectly categorize their workers as contractors. Now, it often comes to light many years later, and it is a huge problem. I'll tell you a true story. I'll just give you the Reader's Digest version. Many years ago, there was a gentleman that hired our firm to do some bookkeeping and tax work. Shortly after he retained us, I got a frantic call from him. He was a mover, and he said, "Moshe, I'm sorry, I can't meet today as planned because one of my trucks got in an accident." And I said, "Oh gosh, I hope everyone's okay." He goes, "Well, a couple had to go to the hospital." Long story short, Claudine, he had all of those people coded as contractors. He did not list them as employees. So his truck was involved in a work-related accident. When the workers got to the hospital, they asked what happened. And they said, "Oh, we were driving the truck. We got in an accident." And they said, "Oh, so this is a workman's compensation claim." He never listed them as employees. He never paid workman's comp. And the end result was the state of New York went back 2 or 3 years. I forgot. He ended up owing more than $100,000. It was very serious. And he was lucky that they didn't prosecute him criminally. So while not every case is that extreme, it really is important for the small business owner to understand first and foremost how to categorize their workers and to work with professionals in the industry who work with payroll, who work with taxes, and to make sure that everything's being done correctly. It's going to be a costly dinner if you try to get a free lunch.
Moshe, that was an amazing, I would say example, but real life story of just what can happen when business owners don't categorize and file correctly. Thank you for sharing that. Let's talk a little bit about the Paycheck Protection Program. COVID happened, for several years, and the Paycheck Protection Program was really made to, it was really issued by private lenders and credit unions and are backed really by the Small Business Administration. And the purpose of the PPP, Moshe, we all know, is to incentivize small businesses to keep workers on payroll and or to rehire laid off workers that lost wages due to COVID-19 disruptions, right? So it ended, I think, back in May of 2021. And so existing borrowers may be eligible for PPP loan forgiveness at that time. PPP is not still available. Is that right, Moshe? It's not available.
That's correct.
Okay. So what should business owners do with the PPP money that they received?
Oh, great question. We're seeing on the news a lot of problems that came about from the government handing out billions and billions of dollars very, very quickly. So we're seeing that at our firm too. Many of our clients truly benefited, and actually their businesses were saved because of that wonderful program, and so many jobs were protected and saved because of the money that was made available. But a lot of businesses actually acquired money, whether they deserve to get it or not, and they're sitting on certain sums of money. So I think in order to answer your question, let's clarify the difference between the PPP, the Payroll Protection Program, and what we choose to call the ADL, the Disaster Loan Program. And they're two different things. So the PPP was intended to be a forgivable loan if the funds were used exactly as you described, to support the business during the COVID era economic shutdown and to protect jobs. If a business owner theoretically used those funds correctly, then they can apply for forgiveness. And we've seen many clients that have had very large amounts correctly forgiven. If someone is sitting on funds that have not been spent yet, I would strongly advise them to seek out the advice, contact the SBA directly, go to the lender where they got those funds from, or get some advice because there will be clawbacks. And the worst thing that you'd want to find yourself in or a situation for your small business is having to pay back a very large sum of money when you're not prepared to do that. So I would say seek out professional advice. The confusion, though, is between the PPP program, Claudine, and the ADL, the disaster loan that a lot of people got. That was meant as a loan. And the SBA gave it out on terms of up to 30 years. So that is an amazing benefit for businesses that really suffered, like a restaurant that when people were not going out during COVID, how could the restaurant keep its doors open? And they got these emergency loans. And there were some requirements on how that money would be spent, but it was not intended to be forgivable. So the best guidance that I can provide is if you have not had your PPP loan forgiven, get some guidance immediately. Find out what you're eligible for, take advantage of the benefits, or be prepared to pay the money back while you have the money and while you're in control.
Great advice, Moshe. Thank you so much. Our listening audience will be glad to hear all this great advice that you're providing. So, Moshe, let's close with this. If our listeners could have one takeaway from what we talked about today, what would that one takeaway be?
Oh, that's an easy question, and it's something that I share with my clients over decades. And that's surround yourself with good, talented people. Get excellent advice when you're a small business owner, Claudine, as you do and I do. And you and I talk about this all the time. You know, when you're a small business owner, you might be really talented in your chosen area of expertise in your industry. But how many, you know, I'm an accountant, so do I know the law? Yeah, I know a little bit about the law, but I certainly contact lawyers when I have legal questions. Insurance is such an important part of my industry, but I'm not an insurance expert. So I have insurance professionals on speed dial on my phone every time a question comes up. Obviously, accounting, taxes, things like this, and also business guidance and advice. You need professional consultants from time to time. Your business might be successful in one area, maybe struggling in another area. So the takeaway, the answer to your question really is understand what you know. Acknowledge what you don't know, surround yourself with good, honest, talented business professionals, and then there's nothing that can stop you.
Wonderful advice, Moshe. I stress whenever I talk to my podcast guests is that whenever you're building a team, you know, in your business, know what you are capable and comfortable doing. And if you are not comfortable doing something, then outsource it or have someone else on your team to take over that responsibility. It's really important to know what you're good at and what you're not good at. And it's okay. We're not the jack of all trades, right? So, and also have really, I agree with you 100%, is have great people on your team and have a mentor. I think mentors are really important as well, too, to help you in your business.
Absolutely. If I might just add, I call it a board of directors. I always advise my clients, have three people in your world, in your orbit that you trust. And whenever you're in a situation where you have to make an important decision, however you define important, take that question, that decision to those three people separate from each other. And if all three of those people who know you and who you trust and who are successful in their chosen industries or professions, if they give you the nod of approval, go forward with it. But if even one of those three tell you to rethink it or they're not sure, you should take pause, tap on the brakes, and maybe massage that idea or that question or that decision, because somebody who you trust and who is successful already has suggestions for you to rethink that. And that's advice you should take. So I call it a board of directors. I've had a board for decades and they never fail me.
That's right. They're there to support you. And I always say, when
Absolutely.
in doubt, don't.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yes. Okay. So, Moshe, what is the one piece of advice that you wish someone had given you when starting your business?
Oh, okay. I probably I started my business right out of college, and I started part-time. And I saw that it took off, but I think I stayed part-time maybe a little longer than I should have. I should have believed in myself more. I think the signs were there. But you know, when you're young and you're new to business, you just don't want to take unnecessary chances. So I guess the advice would be, Moshe, believe in yourself. Check these boxes, and if all the boxes are checked, run with it. You know, you've got what it takes to succeed. So that's, I think, the first thing that comes to mind.
I love that advice. I absolutely love that. Believe in yourself. Whenever I have guests on my podcast, they always leave me with something so motivating. And I really love that. And another phrase that I talked about before is you have to take chances, right?
You
You
do.
are your best support and you have to, you grow through what you go through. Everything that you go through is a growth for you. It should be just a chance to grow from that. So I really love that, Moshe, that you said believe in yourself because we are our best advocate.
Absolutely.
Moshe, thank you so much for joining us today on the Virtual Ingenuity Business Podcast. I love talking with you and just sharing ideas, and I always gain such wealth of information from you about accounting and tax preparation. So I know that our listening audience have also gained a wealth of information from you as well.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I always enjoy every opportunity we have to get together. You're an excellent host of this podcast, and you're an excellent networking partner, and you're a pretty sharp cookie in the world of small business. So thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Thank you again, Moshe. So where can my listening audience find you?
Oh, that's very easy. First of all, if they want to talk to me, we actually answer our phones. We've got a toll-free number. We have clients all over the country, and that's 888-432-8187. And I'm all over the internet. We have clients everywhere, and we're pretty well known after 40 years. So you can go to our website, and that's mkabusiness.com. And on our website, there's a few videos of me sharing some information and a little bit about our firm and a little bit about taxes and bookkeeping and things like that. And all of our prices are right there on the website as well for all the different services. No surprises, no hourly fees. And we just welcome the opportunity to speak to people who have questions. There's never a charge. Every consultation is always free.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Moshe Klein and Associates, again, you can find them on the web. You are all over the internet.
I am.
Yes. MKABusiness.com. Again, Moshe, it's such a pleasure talking with you today. And my listening audience, you can listen to more episodes of the Virtual Ingenuity Business Podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time. Let's impact together.